Hello and welcome to Healthy Mind, Healthy Life with your host Avik. This podcast is all about exploring the latest research, sharing personal stories and providing personal tips for improving our mental health and well-being. Each episode will be joined by experts in the field of mental health as well as individuals who have experienced the transformative power of a healthy mind firsthand. Together, we will dive into a range of topics from managing stress and anxiety to building resilience and cultivating happiness. So, join us on this journey to discover new ways to take care of our minds, bodies, and souls. And let's work together to create a healthier, happier world one episode at a time. So, let's get started. Hello and welcome to Healthy Mind, Healthy Life, where we delve into the transformative power of therapy and mental well-being. I'm your host, Avik, and today we are joined by the remarkable Dr. Bonnie Wimms. So welcome to the show, Dr. Bonnie.
Well, thank you. And thank you for calling me remarkable. I like that.
Yeah, it's really true, for sure. And but before we discuss our topic today, which is very great, where we'll be talking about unraveling the misconceptions and also at the same time debunking the therapy stigmas. But before we delve deep into this topic, I'd love to mention this to all of our listeners that Dr. Bonnie is the host of Therapy Deconstructed podcast, where Dr. Wimms is here to unravel the misconceptions surrounding the therapy and also at the same time shed light on its accessibility and the benefits for all, regardless of the background or the status. Mm-hmm. Trying from her own journey of overcoming the trauma and becoming a psychologist, Dr. Wimms offers infallible insights into the transformative potential of the therapy. So why to wait? Let's join us as we explore the path of healing and the fulfillment through understanding the true essence of therapy. So welcome to the show again, Dr. Wimms.
Thank you so much. Thank you for talking about my podcast also, because I'm sure, as you know, it's a lot of work to do a podcast, but I believe so much in the topic. And I'm really glad we got to meet through this genre that we're working with, because it's a really important topic to talk about.
Exactly. So Dr. Bonnie, like to start with, if you can share like some of the common misconceptions or maybe the stigmas surrounding the therapy, like that you have encountered in your work.
I think for me, the real watershed moment was about a little over a year ago now, because that's when my podcast started, probably a little bit before that. And you'll know this too, but you hear from people concerns when they talk about therapy or think about how to get help, that somehow starting therapy is an admission of being broken or an admission of being really ill. And that is something a lot of people don't want to admit or go anywhere near. And so instead of it being sort of something that you could do that would help you and that could possibly transform your life, as you said, it's seen as something only the really sick or ill or broken people do, and not as something that can help anyone live a more fulfilled life. So I think that was the biggest one for me to recognize. I was hearing that from clients or potential clients, asking me if I thought they were broken, or asking me if what they were presenting with was fixable. This real sort of desperate feeling that therapy is only for those people. And I had a kind of an epiphany. I was waiting for someone else to change it, you know. And I think I got sort of this idea one day that therapists ourselves, as a psychologist, I bear a large responsibility on how to debunk myths and how to help people understand that maybe their idea of what therapy is coming from their limited experience of it out in the world. And the only way we really hear about therapy is movies, you know, TV shows, books, that sort of thing, unless you've been in therapy or you are a therapist, or you'll hear from friends, but you won't really have a true sense of what it is or what it can do for you. And so I thought, somebody needs to start a podcast. And so I finally decided that somebody was me. And I try to talk each month about topics where people come to me with these misunderstandings that then lead to the stigma. That's the real problem, is that if I misunderstand it, then I judge it and I don't want to do it, or I judge it for others. But it's, so it turns into that stigma. It turns into something that is not only not for me, but it's negative for anyone. If I find out you're in therapy, then somehow you're sick, you're broken. And so that was really the impetus behind that, was to prove to people that it's actually the opposite. Okay. The vulnerability required to start therapy is takes great strength of character to want to examine how you think and why you think the way you do, and to try to change that. So yeah, it was kind of this whole idea around, I don't want people to feel like they're broken because they're looking for help and support.
Exactly true. That's very, very true. Yeah. So, I mean, how do these misconceptions contribute to the overall stigma surrounding the therapy in society?
You know, I think it's so ingrained that it shows up in some ways really subtle. You know, it shows up in all kinds of ways with different types of people. It shows up with men who think they can't be vulnerable because that's weak. It shows up with all sorts of people thinking that I'm feeling this way, but these feelings, I can't share them because then people will think there's something wrong with me. It shows up with clients who are honest enough to talk to maybe their employer about it, and then they end up not getting that promotion or asked to retire early because they've been out on mental health leave. I've encountered it so many ways, and how a misunderstanding about what people are doing when they're in therapy leads to judgment, even punishment in work environments or other areas. And that's a complete misconception to the idea that somebody's brave enough to say, I don't feel well, you know, I'm sad or I'm anxious or I have nightmares or my trauma relives in my head every day. And people are brave enough to step into a therapeutic environment to try to help that. And then they're hit with stigma, they're hit with misunderstandings, they're hit with judgment when people say, you shouldn't be feeling that way, or you shouldn't be talking about it, or what's wrong with you that you're talking about it, that you're expressing what you need, or you're expressing how your pain feels. I think it shows up in the press a lot. You know, a good example is, I think it was a year or two ago when a tennis player, Naomi Osaka, said that she found the post-match interviews with the journalists very anxiety-provoking for her. And she asked for accommodation, and she was basically told, if you can't do that, you can't play. So there was a real judgment of her willingness to come forward and talk about her anxiety, and then a punishment. You know, you can't play if you can't talk to the reporters, which is, it makes no sense. There could have been all sorts of ways they could have accommodated that. And the idea that her anxiety was not thought of as something serious that needed to be considered and needed to be accommodated. It wasn't recognized as, you know, say somebody breaks their foot, they get a cast on, and everybody can see that injury and they can notice that, oh, this person needs a crutch or they need a wheelchair, they need accommodation, and it's given. But the pain that we carry inside that's hidden is often ignored, made fun of, or judged. That's how I kind of see it.
Exactly, John. Very, very. So, I mean, as someone who grew up surrounded by the trauma, how did your personal experiences shape your perspective on the therapy?
Good question. I grew up in an abusive household with an alcoholic father. And so that was my reality. That's all I knew. You know, as a young girl, that was life. And I didn't really understand the possibilities around that. But I did always have sort of a feeling of, can't we get out of this? I was very, very young when I was asking my mother to leave. Can we leave? Just thinking there's got to be somewhere else that's better than this. And so I think early on, I had a recognition that things could improve, things could change, that you don't have to just put up with what's right in front of you. Fast forward many, many years later, I was finally able to go back to school and finish my degree and get my doctorate. And I did that in London, England, when my husband and I were living overseas. And I was 50 years old when I graduated. So it was a long time, a long journey to get there. And when I graduated, it was like this just beautiful sort of pairing up of that traumatized child within with the adult saying, I got this, I can take care of us. And so for me, becoming a psychologist in part was me healing myself. I was also in therapy, don't get me wrong. I'm not silly enough to think I can give myself therapy. But it really was the adult in me giving my child support and saying, I understand that this trauma was hard for us, but we can improve, we can change, we can get better, and we don't have to be defined by that trauma. And so I wrote my thesis on domestic violence, big surprise, and it was also my process of trying to understand it, to try to heal myself through this training and then my work. Therapy overall was a godsend for me because it gave me the sense that I could step out of my trauma and recognize that it didn't define me and that I could do things through that, that it taught me things, it taught me strength of character, and it taught me resilience, and it taught me to trust myself. So my trauma was huge. I don't think I would be a therapist without my trauma, but it doesn't define who I am so much as it's part of my journey. You know, it's part of what happened to me. That doesn't necessarily mean that's who I am. It's just what happened to me. And I try to use that in support of clients and support of this whole idea that therapy can change your life. It can help you step out of that trauma definition where you feel defined and trapped by it.
Understood. So how can we address the misconception that therapy is only for those with severe mental health issues and make it more accessible to everyone? What do you think?
Well, in my small, tiny little way, in my podcast, Therapy Deconstructed, I try to talk about specific things that people come to therapy for and how maybe therapy has helped in those things. And you know, you've got this wide range of things people come to therapy for. Sometimes very traumatic things people have endured. In my case, obviously a traumatic childhood. But oftentimes you have people that are just sort of walking through life and getting to a point where they don't feel connected to themselves in the same way maybe they did before, or they don't feel connected to their partner, or they're not fulfilled in their career, or they're having lots of conflict with family. There's all sorts of hard things we endure every day that aren't hugely traumatic, that don't get written up in newspapers, that aren't about major life changes. It's just life, you know? Life is hard sometimes. And it's just simply getting the opportunity to go speak to somebody free of judgment, free of any sort of, you know, when you talk to a friend and they say, well, you should do this, they give you advice, or they say, well, you know, that happened to me too, let me tell you what I did. It's fine. You know, it can help you kind of offload sometimes. But in therapy, it's about, I'm trying to hear you in a way that through my effort to understand you, I'm trying to hear what you're saying and what you're not saying, and to try to help you kind of get around your blocks and get to what you really, really mean and what you really, really understand. I was just on a call with a client and it took about 45 minutes for us to finally get to, but she's angry. She's angry. She doesn't want to be angry. She's afraid of being angry. She anger in her family was dangerous. So it took 45 minutes of us talking for her finally to move across all of her defenses and say, you know what? I'm just really angry right now. And there was this opening for her to be able to admit that. She wasn't going to go punch somebody, but she just needed to admit this anger toward her circumstance. So then we discussed using that anger as energy, motivation to change. What isn't right? What is wrong with your soul? You know, what's not connecting for you? And that's really common. You know, it's really common where people are not understanding where they are in their life and they're not satisfied. And then you end up with symptoms of depression, anxiety. You end up with people really feeling dissatisfied with themselves because they haven't come back to this sense of who am I and what do I really want? And sometimes it takes therapy to get past the defenses, you know, get past the way I should be feeling, what I should be doing, instead of getting to what you really want and who you really are.
Understood. So in your experience, what are some of the key effective ways to educate the public about the benefits and the importance of the therapy? Because this is why
I think
this is what very, very important. I believe a lot of people do not go deep into this thinking that therapy, why it is required and why so much important.
I think it's about being as clear and as transparent and kind of plain speaking as you can. I post on social media. I put out a newsletter. I write a blog. I have a podcast. I'm kind of out there. And I try to talk about specific presentations and the way in which therapy helped that. Now, everybody's individual, you know, so you come to me with some symptoms of depression. The way I worked with somebody before that may not work with you, but we'll find our way. The real goal in therapy is for me to be able to allow you to speak just clearly without fear of judgment or I'll tell you what to do or anything like that. So I think really it's about being clear with the message, being really clear about and honest about how people are feeling out there. Because once you recognize you're not alone, there's so much opportunity in that to recognize it's not something that is just wrong with you that you can't fix. It's actually more about accepting what is happening so that you can then challenge it. So I feel like it's about speaking. And I know as a psychologist for myself, it's my job. It's my job to speak instead of relying on maybe other people, you know, other people to come forward who've been through therapy. That's fine. You know, people do that. But I think it's far more critical for practitioners like us. I'm sorry about that. Can you hear that?
Yeah, I can hear. Yeah, I can hear.
Can you hear the siren? I'm just trying to give it a minute to go by. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, I don't know. I imagine there's a lot of ways, but as a psychologist, my way is speaking about it. I speak about it all the time. Opportunities to talk about loneliness, isolation, you know, just everyday things that can lead to people not feeling well, and trying to educate to say, you can feel well. You can. It's possible. You don't have to just endure this. You don't just have to feel bad. You don't have to just medicate or drink or, you know, that they're, you don't have to just try to pretend you're not feeling bad. You can actually challenge it and feel better.
Okay. Understood. So, what role do you think the media and popular culture play in perpetuating therapy stigmas? And at the same time, how can we change this narrative?
Well, I think the media is huge in this because, like I said earlier, I don't think most people have experience of therapy. Unless you know one, you know, my husband knows me, and so he knows a lot about therapy, even if he hasn't been in therapy. But for the most part, unless you know someone, your ideas have come from the media of what therapy is. You just ask anyone and they'll talk to you about a movie they saw or a book they read. And depending on what it is that they've read or what it is that they've seen, they've now decided that that's what it's about. So the media is huge in that. They sway you know, huge groups of people in whether it's a positive thing or not, and how it works. You know, these silly movies where therapists look like these stiff wooden, you know, people that didn't speak and aren't human, or just comedies where it doesn't come off as a serious thing. It does a lot of damage, I think, to people. They internalize that and they feel that way about therapy as a result, you know? So for me, if the media's voice is really loud, we need to be louder. You know, we need to be louder to start swaying that narrative. You have to hear something different. Otherwise, you're just going to believe what you hear. So I think therapists should be much more vocal. In my intro to my podcast, I say, let's throw open the curtain, you know, let's show what goes on inside a consulting room. It doesn't have to be this scary, silent, quiet thing that nobody knows about. You should be meeting and seeing therapists talking about it. I know we don't talk about specific clients, of course not, but we can talk about what therapy is like. And you can meet me at a party and know that I'm a human being and I'm relatively normal and that it's communication, it's conversation. Just want to try to bring down the fear around it, I think, you know? So I just feel like therapists need to be louder. Therapists need to be out there talking about it in a way that's helpful and that helps people see the benefits of talking with somebody. You know, I do all kinds of blogs and newsletters about the difference between a friend and therapy, the difference between coaching and therapy, what it is that therapy can do for you in certain situations and the way in which it can empower you and allow you to change. There's just a million things to talk about. So the more I talk about it, I realize the more there is to talk about. So it's really about being louder than the voices that show up. You know, I'll give you an example. A few years ago before COVID, there was a prominent psychologist that came out absolutely against online therapy. Just cannot work, does not work. No one should be doing it. And then boom, right? COVID. Everybody was doing it. And now a lot of therapists are still doing it or doing it in some sort of hybrid version because we found it does work. We can use it. And it gives people access who wouldn't maybe normally have had access in rural areas or areas where they couldn't get to a therapist. Even somebody, you know, you have a full-time job. How do you get across town for a 2 o'clock appointment on Tuesday? So it's online has opened up the possibility for people to have access to therapy that maybe couldn't have before. It's more convenient, maybe more affordable as a result of that. So a few years ago, never works. Now it's proven it does. And these ideas that just get ingrained out there. And then we find out that, oh, well, maybe we can try this. Maybe we can do this. So it's that critical thinking piece that I think as a therapist, I have to be the voice of reason because I know what therapy is, you know? I know it's amazing. I know it's a beautiful thing. I know it's nothing to be frightened of. I know it's hard, but I also know it's changed my life and it changes people's lives every single day.
Exactly. Lovely. So, how can therapists and mental health professionals work to create a more welcoming and inclusive environment for the clients?
I think we have to work to be right where they are. We have to work really hard to be present for our clients exactly where they show up. And that sounds easy, but you'll know this, it's not easy. We have to push our own stuff away and just be very present and very open to what is going to occur in the session so that the client feels, first of all, there's no judgment, but that they feel 100% accepted for what they're saying and for the way they're feeling. Because out there in the real world, we don't feel that way. We're constantly judged. We're constantly told we shouldn't be feeling that way. Or, you know, if you were doing this, you'd feel better. Or just an onslaught of advice and all of that. So I just feel like show up, be present, listen. That's the big one. Listen. You wouldn't believe how the people I meet don't listen. Listen, hear what's being said to you. That is the number one thing, validating that person's existence.
Exactly. Definitely true. So great. Thank you so much, Dr. Bonnie. It's a really great
You're
conversation
welcome.
with you, and it's and also like today's conversation has shed light on the misconceptions that are surrounding the therapy and the stigma that often accompanies it. So so dear listeners, like we have learned today from Dr. Bonnie that therapy is not reserved for those facing extreme challenges, but rather it's a valuable resource for anyone seeking support and personal growth. So
yes.
Yeah. So when we say like by debunking these stigmas and fostering a more open dialogue, we can definitely encourage everyone, every people to prioritize their mental health and seek the assistance they need to lead the fulfilling life. So always remember that therapy is a tool for empowerment and the self-discovery, and it's never too late to take that first step towards healing. So
yes.
Join us next time as we continue to explore the topics that promote healthy mind and a healthy life. So till then, thank you so much. Take care and be well.